Mad River Rising, the next production to open at Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park, isn't exactly a world premiere, but it is new in many ways, certainly to Ohio audiences, and even to those who might have seen its original production in Vermont 2 decades ago. Playhouse Artistic Director Blake Robison is one of the few people who's been engaged with both productions, and this evening we'll be talking about this story involving local history and bonds of family legacies. Good evening, Blake.
Hi, nice to be here.
It's great to have you here. So you have some past with the playwright Dana Yeaton. Is that pronounced correctly?
Yeaton. I do, in fact. When I started my first theater company in my home state of Vermont, Dana was a local playwright who I partnered with to help start an education program. And that began a decades-long relationship between playwright and director-producer. I've done many of his plays over the years in one of those capacities. And Mad River Rising was our first big hit together in 1998 back at this little company called Vermont Stage.
And it was a play about a farm, an elderly gentleman, and a flood. But you were interested in moving it all to Ohio.
That's right. Mad River Rising is about an 85-year-old farmer named Angus Stewart, who escapes from his nursing home and is found at the top of the play hiding out in the hayloft of the family barn the weekend before it's set to go to auction. So it's about saving the farm, and it involves generations because his grandson shows up trying to deal with the situation, deal with this elderly grandparent who's in a little bit of dementia, not entirely sure what's going on all the time. When I went back and looked at the play, thinking of the current Playhouse season, I hadn't read it in years. And I was hiking with the playwright, Dana, and I said, what if you looked at that play again and gave it an update? You know, it's been nearly 20 years. A lot has changed. We have smartphones, we have tablets, and a certain amount of technology factors into the plot of the play. So I said, let's update the technology, and would you consider moving it from Vermont to Ohio? I suppose to match my own personal journey from Vermont to Ohio, but I see a lot of similarities, many resonances between the values espoused by both of those communities. There's a sincerity, there's a straightforwardness, there's a sense of can do, and you have to live within your means and earn along your way. Those are values that Angus certainly espouses in the play, and I've learned that being here in the Midwest.
In terms of the relocation to Ohio, did Dana know things about Ohio, or did you have to kind of give him the context? Because the flood in the original play was in 27 in Vermont, and now we're using the flood in the 1930s.
That's right. Here. Well, I suppose it's convenient that nearly everybody has had a historical flood at some point. We did not know that it was only 10 years later than the one originally in the script. No, I didn't give him a lot of guidance. I simply threw this at him, and like any playwright who wants to see his work produced, he went off and did a ton of research and sent me a new draft about 3 months later. So it has been shifted to Appalachian, Ohio. The flood has moved from 27 to 37. The grandson, Charlie, who is a management consultant in the big city, that used to be Albany, New York, which of course is close to Vermont, but now I guess he's had an urban upgrade and he lives in Chicago. And so he leaves his office in Chicago and drives into rural Ohio to try to find his grandfather and help solve these family problems.
Okay, so the play is set in the present, but it doesn't remain in the present. In fact, it sort of flows back and forth through time and, in fact, sort of through Angus's memory. Can you talk a little bit about how that is accomplished on stage?
Sure. Much of the story is in the present tense. It's Angus and his daughter-in-law and his grandson. But as you said, there are flashback scenes to the Great Flood of 1937. And in those flashbacks, we see Angus as a young boy of 7 years old, portrayed by a local young actor. And we meet Angus's grandfather. And in between those two time periods, there is a somewhat ghostly figure, a woman who grew up with Angus on the next farm over of French-Canadian and Native American descent. Her name is May. So she becomes a kind of ghostly narrator figure who can help bridge the gap between those two time periods for Angus and therefore for the audience too. It's very easy to follow. It's in a very kind of simple flashback structure that we're all familiar with in plays and movies and television. But it adds so much because you're able to look at Angus's problems in the context of multiple generations.
Yeah.
Almost like the, you know, that great old play, The Kentucky Cycle, where you meet generations and generations of this one family. And we're able to do that with a cast of five or six people.
And Angus has an interesting relationship with May, because sometimes he doesn't want to hear what she's talking about.
No. She, Angus is a salty old guy, and he's reached that point in life where he thinks what he thinks and he says what he says, and he just doesn't care if you agree with him or not. I think we all know a few people like that.
Yes.
And May, being his contemporary, gives it right back to him. May's journey over the course of the play is to make Angus face up to some hard truths about his family and the choices they made and what he has and hasn't been able to accomplish with his own sons and grandsons.
Let's talk about the actor who's playing Angus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is, there are actors who have achieved a certain age, but they might be few and far between. And it sounds like you've found someone who you have a little bit of past with, who's very interesting for this role.
That's right. Robert Hogan plays the role of Angus. I've known Bob for nearly 20 years when he was in a play at another regional theater with my wife, who at the time was an actor. But the great thing about Bob is that he truly is age appropriate for this role. He's in his 80s. The character of Angus is 85. And it's so rare to see a senior actor, somebody who literally has been in the professional theater, has been an actor for 60 years of his life. You bring that experience and that wisdom to the role, and it's unmatched. You know, I love watching older actors. I love younger actors, but older actors is where you really see mastery of the craft on stage. And that's what you're going to see when you come see Bob Hogan do this. His career dates back to the golden age of television. You know, in the 60s and 70s, he was on every show you can think of, MASH and Batman and all those shows. He spent a lot of time in Hollywood, but he has a deep theatrical resume as well. Something that many audiences have probably heard of is A Few Good Men. That, of course, started as a Broadway play before it was made into a film. And Bob was in the original Broadway company of A Few Good Men.
So I have to ask, is he quite as cranky and aggravating as Angus is?
Well, Bob thinks he's cranky and aggravating, but he's not. He's actually a very charming, wonderful man. But they certainly do share a certain wryness of personality.
You have another personal connection on this, and that's with regard to the music that you're using. Tell us a little bit more about Aeneas Mitchell, whose music you are using to enhance the production.
Yes, Aeneas Mitchell is a wonderful singer-songwriter. She's celebrated in those circles as being part of the new folk movement. She performs off with Annie DeFranco and Michelle Schacht and Bon Iver and some of these wonderful, wonderful new artists. Aeneas and Dana, the playwright, and I all grew up in the same little town of Middlebury, Vermont. Dana still teaches writing at the college there, and Aeneas's father, Don Mitchell, was a very celebrated writer and poet on the faculty. So we share this background in a very rural place. And the play is set in an old, dilapidated barn, the same kind of barn that we all grew up playing in and jumping out of the hayloft and drinking in when we were teenagers. And I think there's something to that. There's something to exposure to that rural environment and that sensibility that gives us an entryway into the play. And it's our shared background and experience. So when I listen to Aeneas's music, in particular, where we have her permission to use songs from her catalog, and we focused on the Young Man from America album and the one after that, simply called XOA. And it sounds like the world of the play to me. It feels like she's singing about this family, Angus's family, the Stuarts.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, you know, the Playhouse, you're operating in a sizable American city where farming is really not part of our culture any longer. So why do you feel that audiences are going to connect with this story?
Well, ultimately, it's a play about family, and we're all experts on family. That's one thing I love about the theater. It is also a play about generations, about taking care of our elderly. You know, how many of us have elderly parents or grandparents, and we're dealing with those late life issues? I know I am in my own life, dealing with those things with my father. So those issues will resonate with absolutely everybody.
I grew up with a grandfather in my house. My dad's father lived with us, and he was an old fellow from Britain, and he came from southwest England, where everybody raised fruits and vegetables and flowers, and we always had a garden. And even when he was really too old and feeble to be doing it, he was out there working in the garden.
Right.
So as I read this script, I really identified with that character, feeling like that. Now, the first time you directed this, you were 20 or so years younger than you are now. I bet you have a different perspective.
Well, the first time, I didn't direct it, actually. I produced it.
Oh, okay.
The original director is a friend of mine named Mark Ramond, who did a lovely job. And I was on the outside steering it as a producer because it was a brand new script at the time. I'm thrilled to take the helm myself at this point. And as you were just saying, I have a different relationship to the material. When I first read it, I associated myself very strongly with the grandson and found Angus to be a little ornery and kind of annoying at times. And now coming to it in, let's say, early middle age, it's swept over me in an entirely different way because of my own relationship to my father and what he's going through. This has turned out to be a very moving and personal process for me as an artist, as a director. And I think that audiences will feel that.
Yeah,
when they
suspect
see it.
That this will be moving to many people to see this production. Mad River Rising opens on Thursday at the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park's Marks Theater, where it will be presented through November 11th. For more information, follow the link that you'll find at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I've been talking with Blake Robison, the Cincinnati Playhouse's artistic director, about his production of Mad River Rising. Thanks for coming by, Blake.
Thank you, Rick.
For Around Cincinnati, I'm Rick Pender.